Third and five, John David Booty out of the shotgun. Rarity this year. Throws into the end zone. Catch by Osbury. Great catch. Touchdown, USC. David Osbury.
Hey, Trojan fans. It's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher Ryan Abraham.
Welcome back to the Peristyle Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Abraham, joined as always in our first segment by the coach, Harvey Hyde. How are you doing today on this fine Wednesday, coach?
Ryan, I'm always doing good. I love talking football, especially USC Trojan football, and it keeps getting closer and closer and closer. We had to have a countdown. You know,
yeah.
You count the minutes before the first game.
We're inching our way there. I think it's just under 3 months until, is that right? Until the first game. Where are we at? We're in June, July, August, fall camp, and then the season starts.
It certainly does.
It starts on August 30th. We're actually going to go through, in this segment, we're going to go through the schedule. In a little bit of detail, 10 of the 12 game times and TV times have been announced, so we'll kind of go over that and some of the significance of that in this segment with the coach. But first, if anyone has any questions or comments, you can always email us, podcast@uscfootball.com, or you can go to uscfootball.com, post some questions on the message board. We'll do our best to answer them and talk about them here on the air. And before we get going, I just wanted to give a quick thank you and a shout-out to our friends over at Southern California Tickets. Curtis takes care of you over there at sctickets.com. Just give him a call, 1-800-888-7287. If you have any need for tickets for concerts or sporting events or the theater, just give him a call, Curtis, over there at Southern California Tickets.
That's a good spot to go, especially maybe you might be a ticket or two short of a USC home game. Maybe he can help you out.
Yeah, and I went on his website the other day, and they have lots of Laker tickets up there. I can't believe how much money people pay to sit courtside at the Laker game, coach. It's unbelievable.
I'll tell you, it is unbelievable. That just shows you how much money's really out there, I guess, because I tell you, if I had two tickets and you wanted to pay me that, Ryan, I think I'd sell them to you.
Yeah. I wish I could afford to pay you for that, coach, but it'd be great. It'd be fun to go to see a game like that at some point, sit next to Jack or you know, any of those the celebrities that kind of hang out right on the court. But I don't know about spending tens of thousands of dollars for a 2.5-hour basketball game.
I'm not quite sure. And I think we can see it a little bit better on television from our angle than they can really actually on the floor.
Yeah. And well, you know, one thing we don't get to see, Curt Schilling, this was in the news the other day, he was sitting courtside for game two of the Celtics-Laker game. And he wrote, and he has a blog, and he writes some crazy stuff in his blog. He wrote in his blog about how Kobe Bryant's mannerisms were so terrible and how he was yelling at teammates and they were just kind of like turning away and not listening to him. So I guess you do get a little bit of a personal touch if you sit on the floor and you get some, you know, the facial reactions and everything from the player. So maybe you get a little bit more than you can see on TV, but I don't know if it's worth all that money.
Well, I don't know if it is either, and a lot of things go on in huddles. A lot of things go on the bench that you're really not aware of, and they're all motivational. Nothing's taken personal. It's just part of wanting to win and saying things and trying to motivate players, you know. So, you know, yeah, you do get a different output, and you do see the different mannerisms of coach. You look at coaches, you look at Doc Rivers. He's yelling and screaming and ranting and raving. His team is jumping off the bench and so on during the game and so on and high-fiving everyone. And then you look at Phil Jackson, another champion coach, won more championships than just about anybody. And he's slow. He doesn't yell. He doesn't show any emotion. The Lakers just sort of stand up. They don't have that same way or attitude that your team really does follow the coach as far as with the way and the like Pete Carroll's enthusiasm. And then there's some coaches that just sort of walk up and down the sidelines. So I really enjoy as a coach watching coaches work and watching the way their teams play. There's no one way of winning. You know, you can't change as a coach or try to copy someone else. You got to be yourself. But I love watching how teams react to their coaches and how their coaches motivate their teams, you know?
Yeah, and I think that would be the biggest thing to sit on the court side there is to just be able to listen to, overhear what's going on in the huddles and see what players say coming off the bench or you know, running onto the floor. I think that would be kind of fun. But we're going to have to get off the semi-Laker talk. We actually had some controversy this week on the site. A lot of Laker talk. Obviously, a lot of USC fans are also Laker fans, but there's a lot of USC fans that aren't Laker fans that don't live in Southern California and aren't really part of that the whole Laker phenomena that's going on. So there were people. There was a lot of threads on the message boards where there was Laker talk, and so there's a little controversy. But I think hopefully we got that taken care of. And let's get on to some Trojan talk. So, like we said, we're going to go over the 2008 football schedule. Some of the TV times have been announced. There's only two games that haven't been, and we'll go through them. We just figure we'll go through the whole schedule and get some thoughts on each game, and you know, the coach can share his insights and you know, where he thinks the team will be at each stage of the season. And first up, August 30th, it's a trip to Virginia. Played in Charlottesville, which is about 2.5 hours outside of Washington, D.C. It'll be local time, Pacific time. It's going to be a 12:30 kickoff on ABC, 3:30, you know, back east. Obviously, it's going to be a first game on the road. First time starting, well, not really first time starting quarterback for Mark Sanchez. He started three games, but, you know, first time it's going to be really his team if he holds on to that position throughout fall camp. What are your thoughts on this game? I know you think there's a lot of potential here just going on the road. The one thing that Pete Carroll's done really well, and he's done a lot of things well, but one of the things he's done really well is going on the road into hostile environments and really ripping the heart out of opponents and stomping them in their own on their own field.
Well, I think it's a very important game for the Trojans because a lot of people are talking about Ohio State and they can't overlook Virginia. The stadium has been sold out, okay? It is a sellout. You can't get a ticket to it. It's going to be a crazy atmosphere down there in Virginia. It's a game they've been looking forward to. I know there's signs all over campus at Virginia in those weight rooms and everywhere. We open against the number one team in the country. We open against USC, this and that. So it's a huge game for Virginia, but it's also a huge game for USC. Why? Because they have to go down to a hostile environment. It's great for recruiting in the South for USC because of the exposure down there. It's a national televised game on ABC. And also, it's a great way to condition. Pete Carroll will use his conditioning when it's hot here in Southern California that, hey, where we're going, it's going to be hotter. It's going to be hostile. We have to be ready. We have to work out in the heat and so on. So he'll get his team ready for this trip. He's... As you mentioned, gone the very same type of atmospheres that when he went to Virginia Tech and these Auburn and so on. So it's going to be a great game for USC as it is for Virginia. It's going to be a great challenge, and it's not going to be hard to get your team ready to play. I really think this game will help prepare the Trojans better for their season than their home opener a year ago against Idaho. No matter what you tell a team, they know it's the University of Idaho. Nothing against the University of Idaho, except it's not an ACC team. It's not a national name. Everyone assumes that it's going to be an easy victory. You don't come to play. You don't have a great camp because you can't focus. But this game, you have to focus on Virginia.
Yeah, no,
you have to. You know what I mean?
I agree with you, Coach. And they were a little flat in that Idaho game last year, and they looked so much better when they went to, like, Nebraska. It wasn't for the opener, but you went to Arkansas, you went to Auburn. They just seemed to be so much more focused on those really tough opening away games, like you said. And, you know, it's going to be Virginia Super Bowl. I mean, this is going to be the biggest game on their schedule. I mean, you can talk about their rivalry games and stuff, but this is the one they're going to be looking forward to. And the problem is for USC, 2 weeks later, September 13th, they got a big game with Ohio State at the LA Coliseum, 5 p.m. local time on ABC. You know, what is the problem there, Coach, when you're going to play an opponent who they're going to be their biggest game? They're going to be up for that Virginia game as big as any game on their schedule. And the Trojans have to look forward to an even bigger game 2 weeks from then in Ohio State. Is there any chance that they could overlook Virginia because of that?
No, you can't overlook Virginia, and Pete Carroll is very good at that. as far as preparing a team game by game by game by game. And obviously the kids know they're playing Ohio State, but if they don't beat Virginia, the game against Ohio State isn't as big. So they'll be ready for Virginia. And Ohio State, actually, guys, or when I look at the Ohio State game, I can't think of a bigger game. I mean, if the Rose Bowl would have had its normal tradition, the last 2 years in the Rose Bowl, it had been Ohio State-USC. Ohio State has played the national championship game. What makes this such a huge game for both schools is because it's a great challenge of rivalry, not only between the schools, but between the conferences. And Ohio State needs to prove something. They've lost their last two national championship bids, and now they have a chance to regain some national recognition against USC. USC may be ranked number one in the country. Ohio State might be ranked number one in the country. Could be one against two. Really could be. So this is a huge game for both programs and both conferences. You can't think of a better non-conference game than this. This is a Rose Bowl game for the past 2 years, and now in the Coliseum, a home game for USC. So this is going to be a huge game with USC's young, talented team against a very experienced Ohio State team that has experienced a lot of disappointment the last 2 years when they played big-time opponents. So I'll tell you, Jimmy Tressel's team's going to be really prepared and focused for this game, and it's going to be a huge game. I can't think of a better game at 5 p.m. national television time, 8 p.m. East Coast time. I mean, this is a bowl game.
It is, Coach, and I think Ohio State's got a lot of motivation because they got waxed in their last two, you know, major out-of-conference matchups against SEC schools in the national championship game. You know, what would be funny about this, I think a lot of the kind of fringe fans, there's a lot of people that haven't really rooted for USC lately besides Trojan fans, a lot, especially in the SEC, they kind of root against them. I think there's going to be a lot of people across the country rooting for USC to beat Ohio State just because they're sick of seeing them get there. And like you said, this could be 1-2, 2-3, 1-3, you know, whatever it's going to come out as. And obviously it's going to be a huge matchup, the biggest non-conference game on the entire college season slate. So, to, you know, the loser of this game could be out of the national championship. And I think a lot of people are kind of sick of seeing Ohio State get there and get through their Big 12 schedule. So you might have a lot of bandwagon Trojan fans rooting for USC just so Ohio State won't be in it next year.
Yeah, that could happen. That could happen. But I'll tell you, those Ohio State fans are everywhere. I'll tell you, tickets, don't even talk about them. You were talking about tickets a moment ago for the Lakers. Just imagine what this ticket cost is going to be for people who are going to try to get tickets.
It'll be crazy, but you know, Curtis over at SC Tickets will be able to take care of anyone that needs them.
Yeah, they'll take care of them.
Yeah. The next, they have actually another bye week. So there's a game at Virginia, bye, Ohio State at home, then a bye week. Then an interesting game at Oregon State up in Corvallis on a Thursday night, September 25th. It'll be a 6 p.m. start on ESPN, a national game. USC's not known for playing these Thursday games. Usually you got the teams like Rutgers or someone that's trying to be up and coming and get on national television. It's interesting that they put this one on a Thursday. You know, Oregon State, you know, Mike Riley up there, they can be a really tough team to beat. Obviously, they beat USC a couple years ago. What are your thoughts on the Beavers?
Well, I tell you, I think this is one of the most dangerous games the entire season for the Trojans. Coming off of Virginia, coming off of Ohio State, having a bye. If you win coming off of Ohio State, you're feeling good, you're celebrating, you're not going to focus that much for a week or two. You're going to have fun. And if you lose against Ohio State, you're going to be down. But you have to wait so long. You have to wait so long until you can play again. And you have to read about it in the papers and all of that. And now you open up at Ohio State, the first conference game of the year on a Thursday night. And Oregon State is a dangerous team. I mean, Mike Riley coaches his kids up. And if you follow the past history of the games against Oregon State, they've been difficult. Their kids are nasty. Their kids hit you. They'll have 40 kids from Southern California on their roster. Kids that either couldn't get in SC, or kids that weren't recruited by USC, or kids that want to prove that the Trojans overlooked them. And I tell you, they get after you. They really get after you. And so this is a very dangerous game, very dangerous game to USC because of the first two games, the outcomes of the first two games, opening conference, but you got to open conference with a win. You've got to, but you're on a road on a Thursday night. It's dangerous. It really is. But so they're going to have to really be focused for this game.
Definitely. And this is kind of one of those weird years on the road for the Trojans in the Pac-10. It's kind of like the remote year. You're going to some of the more remote teams or remote schools in the conference, you know, Corvallis, Oregon, going to Pullman, Washington. You're going to Tucson, Arizona. So it's the travel is going to be a little tougher, and going on a Thursday night is going to be different. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, it's going to be a really tough start to the season, those first three games. Two tough road games and then Ohio State at home. They do have some extra time in between each game, so that might make it more interesting, and we'll see. But after that Oregon State game, they play the Oregon Ducks at home October 4th. That'll be at the Coliseum. Another primetime 5 p.m. ABC game. You know, Mike Bellotti always got a lot of talent on that team. I think if they can come out of those first three games 3-0 and get the next two games at home, I think they're going to be looking pretty good. But what do you think about Oregon?
Well, Oregon is always a dangerous team, and they always have great athletes, and they do a great job of coaching and so on. But it's a different atmosphere playing in the Coliseum and not at Eugene. Eugene's a very difficult place to play, and obviously everyone knows they lost there last year. So there is a revenge factor in this game. Sure, Oregon will have a lot of players from Southern California on their roster. I'm not as nervous about this game as I am about the Oregon State game. I think that the Trojans will be ready to play this game. It's the second conference game of the year. It's turned into, whether people realize this or not, it's quite a rivalry now. It really is. It's a hostile type of game. They've had some big games with them recently. And Oregon always starts off strong early part of the season. The early parts of the season, they're playing well. They started 4-0, 5-0, if you've noticed, and so on. And then they drop off towards the end of the season for some reason. Obviously, we know last year why, because of their quarterback injury to Dixon. But I'm not worried about this game as much as I am the Oregon State game in the Coliseum back home. 5 p.m. ABC National Championship game. I think Oregon, I'm going to give them all the respect in the world. They got a great football program. But I think this game is going to be a challenge. But I think, you know, remember, this is the game Mark Sanchez played last year. And he'll lead this team. He got beat by this team. He's going to lead his team, I feel, and they're going to be ready to play against the Ducks.
I think so. They've lost to some Pac-10 teams over the past few years, like you know, but every year they come back and beat them the next year, and especially when it's going to be at home. I think Sanchez is going to get some revenge, and the rest of the team. I don't think Oregon's going to be as strong as they were last year, and Dixon was just, when they played Dixon, he was on fire. They're not going to have that, so we'll see. I like them in this game as well. I'm definitely don't rank this as one of the top, you know, tougher games of the first four games of the season. But if they're able to get by Oregon, or either way, they're going to play October 11th. It's another Saturday game. Arizona State at the Coliseum. This game has not been announced on TV, so it's a pretty big game that hasn't been on television yet. So it's another chance to get this, especially if Arizona State starts off strong. It's another chance for USC to play in a nationally televised game.
You're right, and that's why television is waiting. Television is waiting to see just what type of start both teams have. Because Arizona State, I don't have their schedule in front of me. I don't know who they play early. But if Arizona State is 3-0 or 4-0 or is off to a great start and so on and throwing the ball around, and Dennis Erickson's got a great name, and this is a huge game. This will have a prime time broadcast time. So that's a game they've probably put that they're going to look at to see how both teams are doing. It'll be on television. It's just who will carry it. I think it's going to be a great game. Arizona State has great talent. I think that I'm not quite sure if the Sun Devils this year will be such a surprise to everyone as they were last year. They started off strong. Dennis Erickson came in at a prime time. They rallied around him and so on. I don't think any team this year will take them for granted in any way. I think the Trojans will be more prepared for Arizona State, not that they weren't last year. And I look for USC to battle them, but I look for USC to be able to handle them because they're at home again. And I think this is going to be a very important game. I think they won't have any problem getting ready to play for them. And again, it's a lot of California kids at Arizona State going against the Trojans. So again, it's a bowl game. It's a bowl game for the Trojans against every one of their opponents, because every time a Pac-10 team comes into the Coliseum, they're loaded with Southern California players. So those players are going to be playing in front of their high school coaches, their family, their friends, and so on. So they certainly want to play hard and play well. So I think it'll be a very competitive game, but I look for the Trojans to beat Arizona State.
Yeah, I agree with you, Coach. And what would make this a very, very interesting matchup? I think USC has a chance to go 4-0, obviously, those first four games before they play Arizona State. Arizona State got, I think it's Northern Arizona is first on their schedule, a couple of Pac-10 teams. Then they play Georgia at home on September 20th. So if they can take down Georgia at home, and you know they're 5-0 at the time when they play USC, and USC's 4-0, that's going to be a huge game, and obviously they'll be picked up on some kind of national broadcast. You know, Georgia is obviously one of the top rated teams in the country, you know, with Ohio State and USC, that anyone, they could all go 1, 2, or 3 in any order. If Arizona State's able to take care of business at home in Tempe, I mean, that would just make for an amazing matchup between, you know, two powers in the Pac-10.
I'm going to tell you something. If Arizona State beats Georgia, wow, look out for Arizona State, because Georgia's going to be loaded next year.
Yeah, they're definitely loaded.
They might have been one of the top teams in the country at the end of the year. If the Rose Bowl would have had the USC-Georgia game last year, those maybe were the two top teams in the country at the end of the year.
Yeah, everybody wanted to see that, and it was a little disappointing to see Illinois. But, you know, Trojans got the win, and it was another Rose Bowl victory, another BCS Bowl win for Pete Carroll, and they keep rolling on. So that's next game, October 18th, they go one of those remote games to Washington State, Pullman, Washington. It's a 12:30 p.m. game on Fox Sports Net, so it'll be another national game. I'm not sure about that one, if that's going to be just out west or not. We'll have to double-check on that. But it will be an early afternoon start, 12:30. Have you been up to Pullman before, Coach? It's pretty far out there.
Well, when I coached, we played Washington State, but we didn't play them at Pullman. We played them in Spokane. And they played one game a year in Spokane. So, no, I haven't been in Pullman, but the players have told me that it's probably one of the toughest places to play at. The crowd is right there on top of you. It's not a large stadium. I think it's 40, 42,000. Crazy. It's freezing cold or raining, and all the kids have got their shirts off, and they're in your face and everything. And, again, it's another one of these games where Southern California kids filled a roster. They just filled a roster. And they throw the ball around pretty good, and they get ready to play for you. And the only thing I don't know, and I can't say much about Washington State this year, is because they have a new coaching staff. I know they're going to wing the ball all over the field, because that's the way they equalize everything up there. So I can't speak on what to expect from Washington State, except in the past, whenever they played anybody at home, they've beaten a lot of people there.
Yeah, and I think they're personnel-wise, I don't think they're going to have the horses this year, but we'll see what the new coaching staff does and kind of brings in some different talent. And I like Bill Doba a lot. He was one of the most charismatic coaches I thought we had in the Pac-10. But, you know, they got a new regime there. We'll see what happens. I've been to Pullman once, and I actually had a really good time there. It's really remote. I mean, you got to fly from, if you can fly into Seattle, and then you can take a little puddle jumper over to, it's like really on the far side, the far east side of the state. They have a really cool campus bar called the Coug. So if you ever go, you got to check out that place. And it's fun, but it's really hard to get to. And it's not a place you'd really want to go back to all that often, especially if you don't like to fly.
Jim Wallen once told me, he says, I didn't live close to campus, but I used to plug in one Willie Nelson record on my CD. he says, and I'd be home.
Okay.
He says, there's nothing to it. I just listened to Willie Nelson, and I'd be home.
Yeah.
He says, there was no stop signs, nothing. He says that I'd get home. I didn't have any traffic problems.
Yeah, it's fine. And I think the team actually ends up staying in Idaho. It's a sister city with Moscow, Idaho. And I think the bigger hotels are actually in Moscow, so people don't even stay in Pullman. But it's an interesting trip up there. You know, you have to try and make it sometime, Coach. I don't know if I'm going to go anytime soon. I'm going to be sending my beat writer. We started a new beat writer, Dan Wyke, and we'll actually talk to him later in the podcast. And he's not going to have the best road schedule to go to. I'm going to take care of the Virginia game, so he won't be working that. But his first two road games will be in Corvallis and Pullman, and he'll be like, oh, I don't know if I took this. Why did I took this job? But it'll be fine. They'll get a couple of good ones. But we're actually we took up the whole time for that segment, Coach. So what we're going to do, that's six games. We're halfway through the schedule. So what we'll do is next week we'll go through the second half of the schedule and go through all those games in detail just like we did today.
I think it's great, Ryan. I really do, and I appreciate the opportunity of discussing USC Trojan football with you.
No, we love having you on. Thank you very much for just being a part of the show and sharing your insights. Thanks again to Southern California Tickets, sctickets.com, 800-888-7287. They're our proud sponsor. Thank you for doing that. Again, if you have any questions, you can email us, podcast@uscfootball.com. Thanks again, Coach, for joining us.
And thank you very much for having me, and have a great week.
All right, we're going to have a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit of recruiting. USC got their 12th commitment for the class of 2009 this week, just yesterday, actually. And then we'll also talk summer workouts with our beat writer, Dan Wyke. So stay tuned.
The Peristyle Podcast will be back after this short break. Tickets, tickets, tickets. SC Tickets is your concert, sports, and theater ticket source. We have the tickets you need to any event worldwide. Football tickets are now available. Call SC Tickets now at 1-800-888-7287, 1-800-888-7287. That's 1-800-888-7287. Or visit us on the web at sctickets.com. SC Tickets, concert, sports, and theater.
Hey, USC Trojan fans, to get into the huddle of your Southern Cal Trojans, log on to uscfootball.com today for all the latest in Trojan football, basketball, and recruiting news. Ryan Abraham will give you an in-depth analysis, recruiting updates, and will answer your questions every day on the message board. So for all the latest in team and recruiting news on your USC Trojans, check out uscfootball.com, the officially licensed Southern Cal site of the Rivals.com network.
We now return to the Peristyle Podcast and your host, Ryan Abraham.
Okay, we're back at the Peristyle Podcast. This is episode number 17. We're in our second segment. We're going to focus on recruiting for this segment. Just to let you know, if you have any questions or concerns, comments, you can always email us, podcast@uscfootball.com. And our sponsor for this segment is the Law Offices of Bart Ring. So Bart's a loyal Trojan. He's been helping Trojan fans with any kind of issues with the law for the last 20 years. If you have any law problems, you can get a hold of him at 818-587-9299 or just go to his website, bartringlaw.com. And someone that doesn't need any legal help, as far as I know, our uscfootball.com recruiting analyst, Gerard Martinez, joins us this segment to talk recruiting. How are you doing today, Gerard?
I'm doing good, but I always take offense that I get to segue with the law problems.
That's not law problems, it's law solutions.
Yeah, if you got law problems, hopefully, you say.
It's law solutions.
Doesn't have any law problems. I just feel like that's a racial comment, really. I think I'm going to hang up now.
Okay. So Zach probably has some legal problems. We could talk to him in one second.
Zach? Oh, man, now you're bringing Zach into this? Why do the recruiting guys always have the legal issues? I don't know.
For those who don't know, that's Zach Lajato. He's one of our writers on uscfootball.com. Helps out.
Where's Zach? He's going to hear this. He's like, what? What did? I'm not even on the podcast, and I'm getting dragged into this stuff.
I know. Poor guy. We're going to have to have him on sometime. We'll definitely have him on during fall camp. But before we just get going a little bit, there's been some big recruiting news this week, and Gerard was breaking it all over the place as usual. The biggest thing, kind of out of the blue, USC got their 12th commitment. From a wide receiver, no less, where we talked to Gerard before, thinking that with two wide receivers in the books, they probably weren't going to get anymore, maybe one more. And this was a guy that really wasn't on the list, all the way from South Carolina. He was the MVP of Nike Camp. Gerard, you want to let people know who this person is?
Alshon Jeffrey, 6'3", 215-pound wide receiver from St. Matthew, South Carolina. He was on the radar. Definitely a guy that USC had been looking at, and they went to go see him during the spring. Interestingly, John Morton actually went to go see him during the spring, whereas Todd McNair is the Southeast recruiting kind of coordinator for USC. John Morton, the receivers coach, actually went to go see him and play in person. And Alshon, interestingly, you know, through the process, even before he had a scholarship offer from USC, was talking about USC being in his top two along with South Carolina. So he was definitely a guy that was looking west the whole time. And this week he decided, you know what, he's going to pull the trigger. He got his official offer, his written offer 2 days ago from USC, and got on the phone and decided, hey, I want to end it all. I want to be a Trojan.
Wow. And so it's kind of surprising to some people that were following it. Didn't think he was going to commit that quickly. He got the offer, boom, just like kind of Hebron Fangupos, who was waiting on the offer. As soon as he got the offer, they almost instantly commit. Just talk about him a little bit. He seems like he's kind of a Vidal Hazelson side receiver. Is that correct?
Yeah, he's got a very interesting build. I mean, 6'3", 215, Anquan Boldin, those kind of names kind of pop up to you. He's kind of a tweener between being a guy that you would see as a possession receiver, maybe in the slot, and a guy who's more of that bigger flanker that goes up top for the ball. He's a long strider. If you watch him play, you see some pretty good moves after the catch, and he doesn't look like he's moving extremely fast. He's not a receiver that's got that blinding speed like a Randall Carroll or even a Devon Flournoy, who's also committed to USC, but you never see anybody really get the angle on him either. So he runs really long stride, really kind of high cut, real long legs, and it doesn't appear that he's really quick, but as you see in those tapes, he's got some tremendous highlight tapes there on Rivals.com if you pull up the database. He doesn't get caught from behind very often. So this is a kid that, you're correct. I mean, it was a surprise that he came publicly with this commitment so early, and maybe even caught USC off guard a little bit. I don't know if this was the plan to have him commit early and have it out there publicly early, but kid was just too excited, and obviously his assistant coach, Dwayne Wages, who we spoke to first, couldn't keep it quiet, and it got out there, and it was like, well, you know what, got to roll with it. So it becomes kind of like Broderick Green and, you know, an early commitment where it's just going to have to stand the test of time, and he's going to have to go through the process. And didn't want to talk so much about taking official visits. Alshon is, you know, admittedly, it's going to be a long process for him, and he realizes that there's going to be some negative recruiting tactics that are going to be used against USC to sway him from his commitment. But we'll see. We'll see how it shakes out. I'm sure there's going to be twists and turns along the way, but it's a recruiting process, and that's why everybody loves it.
Yeah, no, it's always interesting, and guys like this kind of pop, not out of a nowhere, but this definitely wasn't, people weren't really expecting it exactly when it happened. Interesting, I read a little bit on the message boards. I read your story, and it seems like he wants to focus on academics, so he doesn't want to go through any more of the recruiting process, just commit now, and he wants to go out west. It seemed like there were some people in the South Carolina area that just, they were kind of up in arms about this. I mean, he's a four-star guy. He's not, you know, he wasn't a five-star guy, but he was the MVP of one of those Nike camps. I think he was someone that was, you know, highly thought of in the Southeast SEC country. It's just another example of another guy that Pete Carroll goes in and pulls one of these star players out of the South. And it just seems to, you know, it just really upset a lot of the local SEC fans.
Oh, well, definitely. They did the same with T.J. Bryant and Patrick Turner. USC has a nationwide recruiting trail. They go everywhere. But this is the first prospect from South Carolina that they've actually been able to land a commitment from. Now, we'll see if he signs with USC, but as far as getting a commitment, this is the first one. And I tell you what, South Carolina is a great place to try to build a pipeline. It's tough because you've got Clemson, you've got South Carolina, you've got Georgia, who uses South Carolina a lot. And I think with Florida State was at their peak, they were getting a lot of guys from South Carolina. South Carolina is a fantastic state for football talent. And it's actually kind of underrated even for high school football. So it's definitely a place that USC's gone to before and targeted guys there before, but never really had a shot. This particular recruit, Alshon, just decided very early on in the process that he liked USC. He wanted to play at USC. All those reasons are not necessarily out to light, I guess. I mean, it's kind of hard even talking to him personally, you know, outside the wing and the aspect of just being a big-time football program. I don't know what other connections he has for USC. He's going to come out here June 25th for the Rising Stars camp, and that's going to be his first time on campus, and he's going to, you know, just try to take in the atmosphere. I think really if there's anything that has really been the draw for him, it was the coaching staff. I think he, you know, he talked very candidly about just talking to the coaching staff like he's known them for his, you know, entire life. And that's really, you got to give a lot of credit for to Todd McNair, who recruits the region, and John Morton, like I said, went down there in person and saw him and had communicated with him. And it seems like just the back and forth with those coaches, with Brennan Carroll, the recruiting coordinator, he felt at home with the coaching staff, even though he's never really been around the coaching staff for any, you know, long period of time.
Yeah, so, okay, so he's the first out-of-state commitment for the class of 2009. The first one, Pete Carroll at least, has grabbed from South Carolina. Probably the state of Arkansas is breathing a sigh of relief that that Pete Carroll's going somewhere else down there instead of taking another.
They did a good job of stealing away Joe Adams at the end of last year. And so, I mean, yeah, maybe it's USC changes gears, but you know, there's a lot of country out there, and USC's not afraid to go recruit just about any corner of it.
No, definitely not. And I just want to touch one more aspect of this. This makes three wide receivers in the class. What does this mean for the other wide receivers on the board, on your target list, a guy like Shaquille Evans? I thought they were only going after three. Could a Randall Carroll move the corner? What do you think lies ahead for the recruiting class for the wide receivers?
Randall Carroll could definitely move the corner. He's kind of been recruited as an athlete. There's been some talk more that maybe USC will just recruit him as a corner. I think it's pretty open to debate the numbers, because you always have that athlete label that floats around on certain guys. I mean, talking about Alshon, we have to always remember that this kid had 8 interceptions as a junior also on defense. So he's a guy that is no slouch playing on the other side of the ball. Versatility is something that you know USC covets, and Pete Carroll's always looked, you know, upon it, all his recruits. And I think with this latest commitment, there's a little bit of aspect that you kind of wonder, you know, maybe this is a kid that could play on the other side of the ball too. So you got Carroll. I think 4-0 is definitely the all-in-all receiver. I don't think he's going to move anywhere. He's a perfect slot receiver. As far as the numbers go, you know, they're looking for three guys, and we'll see if there's another guy out there. Does it affect Shaquille Evans? Does it affect guys like Rolando Jefferson? Yeah, it does to a certain extent. I mean, you're only going to recruit so many guys at the position, and regardless of how versatile a player may be in that position, you kind of have some type of projection for what you want. And I think Randall Carroll, you know, even if the talk about him playing corner is true, in the end of the day, he might be like Ronald Johnson. I mean, Ronald Johnson was a guy that came in as kind of a quote-unquote athlete, could play it away, and people, you know, saw that originally they were going to put him at receiver. Everybody assumed at the end of the day he would end up at corner. Well, that hasn't happened. He played a whole year at receiver. Doesn't look like he's really moving at this point anytime soon. So that could happen with Randall Carroll as well. I mean, he may end up having a preference, and if USC wants to keep his commitment, he may have to play receiver, and then at the end of the day, they may like him playing receiver. So you have to have that in mind as you recruit down the road. You know, is there a lot of leeway here for another guy to be in the class? I don't know. I think it does shut the door on that to a certain extent. You know, people are really excited about Rolando Jefferson. He's high up in the Rivals 100. Rolando has a long, long ways to go to get qualified. So that is not something that people should be worried about right now. That's not a concern. It's more of the guys like Shaquille Evans and Marlon Brown supposed to be coming down for the Rising Stars camp. He's pretty tight with Matt Barkley. We'll see where that goes. A lot of people really kind of feel like Tennessee is going to be the team to beat, and then there's some other SEC schools that are in the mix like Georgia. So we'll see. I mean, it's a long process, and you know, talking about Alshon, you know, Alshon, hey, maybe he doesn't end up signing with USC. Maybe he's a guy that down the road all of a sudden starts to waver. So they've got to continue to recruit other receivers and make sure that they have other plans down the road too.
Yeah, I mean, that's fairly common when you get a early commit from an out-of-state recruit and they kind of change their mind the last minute. So like you said, we'll see. We'll see what happens. But we can switch gears a little bit. There was another offer that I believe you broke this week going out. It's another out-of-state recruit from Las Vegas, Keenan Graham. He's a defensive end. I think he's 6'3", like 220-ish, if I'm not mistaken. He had an offer this week. Can you talk a little about him?
Keenan's a very interesting player because this is a kid that came down to the Spark camp in Long Beach, and at 6'3", 210 pounds, actually ran a 4.59 Spark, electronic 40. Very good time for a guy that size. Had really good numbers overall. I think his ended up spark rating ended up being like 108. Pretty impressive player. Kind of a hybrid tweener, a guy that could play weak side defensive end, which is what he plays in high school with his hand down. But he's also a guy that could end up being maybe a strong side linebacker, a Sam linebacker. So a very athletic player. Haven't seen him play in person, so I can't tell you, the nuances of his game. But, on tape, he looks like a guy that's pretty fast. He runs down a lot of plays from the backside. Great kid. Great kid to talk to. Very articulate. Very smart. He's taken the process well. He's got a great family. I've talked to his mom. Now, he has some family. I think his dad actually lives in Michigan still. So he's going to be going back there this summer for a family reunion. So Michigan's in the mix. He likes UCLA. UCLA was one of his offers early on. But this latest offer just coming in from USC really kind of shook up things for him. I mean, he admittedly didn't really know how things were going to play out towards the summer because this USC offer was pretty big. And he talked to Nick Holt, and Nick being a very intense guy, I think there was a little bit of a bond. And I think, he's pumped up. Now, the big move for USC is to get him in to one of these camps. He's not going to show up this weekend, from what I understand. There's a chance he shows up for the Rising Stars camp, but that was not a guarantee. So if USC can get him in for that Rising Stars camp and can convince him to come down on the campus, I think that might be a done deal. There's a possibility he ends up being lucky number 13.
Those camps are very impressive. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes. And the Rising Star camp, I mean, every year, it's just one of those camps that there's not that many school camps that you're going to send rivals will send for photographers and videographers out to. That's definitely one of them. It seems like it's almost as good as a Nike camp now. And when kids like that are kind of impressed with the offer, it just seems like that pushes them over the edge when they see all the talent that's out there and they get into it. Plus, if you look at, reading your story, if you look at his photo, he's wearing a tie with a Nike windbreaker over it. So he's got style.
He's got, I don't know, those might have been his church clothes or something. I don't know where he took those pictures at. We need to get some new photos of him. But he's a good kid. He's definitely got a good family, behind him, and he's a smart kid. And he's going to make a good decision. He's going to come down and really take his time with things. And I think the May evaluation process for Keenan was just, it was a blitzkrieg. He was just surprised at how much attention he got. And, Las Vegas is not the center of the recruiting era, of all these rankings and all the attention that you get. Certain areas are obviously big for recruiting and big for prospects, and Vegas is not so much. So when you see Michigan's and UCLA's and basically the whole Pac-10 coming in to the Vegas area to start recruiting hard, it's a little bit of a surprise for the kids that are even in that area, and especially the schools. They don't see that kind of attention. They don't see those kind of coaches coming through campus during the May evaluation period like Silverado did with Keenan.
Hey, you get bonus points, Gerard, for using blitzkrieg in your analysis, so I do like that. That's very nice.
Blitzkrieg and zeitgeist. Those are our fan favorites.
Okay. Very nice. Very nice for all our German or World War II fans out there. I have a lot of World War II books. I love reading about that stuff. Okay. So last topic we're going to talk about with Gerard is the camps coming up this weekend. There are two camps, the skills camp and the lineman camp on Saturday and Sunday down at USC. Just Gerard, if you want to talk a little about that and kind of what your expectations, I know you'd said before, it's not a huge year for California linemen, but the skills camp looks like it should have some talent there.
It's going to be interesting to see who shows up to the skills and lineman camp as opposed to the Rising Stars camp, because everybody we talk to that's a top target, a guy that is either got an offer that it's going to be a big camp for them recruiting wise, or a kid that he maybe even doesn't have an offer that it would be good for him to come and perform, they all want to show up to the Rising Stars camp, it seems. So it's going to be interesting to actually see who shows up to the skills camp and the lineman camp. Now, for the skills camp, we had schedule coming in Kendall Kelly and Dre Kirkpatrick, both from Gadsden City, Alabama. And now it seems like after their Texas visit, that might not be happening. They may be pushing that back to the Rising Stars camp. I suppose they're going to be in Auburn at Sunday. So if they're going to be in Auburn Sunday, it's going to be pretty tough for them to be camping out here Saturday. So I'm not necessarily sure what's going on with that. We got to try to get a hold of those guys, track them down, which is not the easiest thing in the world. Alabama guys can come off and on the radar when it comes to doing interviews pretty quickly. So we'll try to see what's going on with that. Obviously, you know, Saturday we'll be down there. We'll let you know exactly who's there. But it's kind of up in the air who the skilled players that are going to show up Saturday are. Lineman camp is probably going to be bent more towards underclassmen. It's not a great year for linemen in California or even nationally. And USC is really not recruiting a lot of linemen. So it's kind of a secondary camp in terms of, you know, where we're going to see offers and maybe even some commitments. The lineman camp is probably going to be pretty quiet with that. The skills camp, you know, you get a guy like Ricky Marray from Corona Centennial, 5'11", 175-pound receiver slash defensive back. We were at the UCLA camp last weekend, and Marray dominated. Marray went against Marlon Pollard, who's one of UCLA's commitments for this class, and a guy who was in the Rivals 100 at one point. He dominated Marlon Pollard. He really, really, I think Marlon Pollard actually has to pay taxes now to Ricky Marray because Ricky Marray owns him. It's just unbelievable. Wow. It's he probably went one-on-one against each other maybe a dozen times. And it's one thing to beat a bunch of different guys that many times, but he went against the same guy every time, and Marray just, he was better and really good in the camp situations. You have to take a step back and watch the game film, though, and I think that's why UCLA had not kind of gone ahead and offered him. They're also looking at Shaq Evans, so that's probably something that they're trying to figure out. You know, who do we offer? Who, if they don't want big numbers, you know, at the receiver position, those two guys are both slot receivers. But right here and now, you know, Marray is probably a little more polished. He catches the ball extremely well. Not a big-time measurables guy, not a guy who's going to go out there and run a 4.440, but when you watch him run his routes, he's as quick as anybody. I mean, his routes are spectacular, and he knows exactly what he's doing. He attacks the cornerback, and unfortunately, last Saturday, Marlon Pollard was that guy that got attacked over and over again. So he's a guy that could end up this Saturday at the skills camp. I would expect to see him probably the first half of the camp playing some receiver, and then the second half of the camp playing some cornerback. Possibility, maybe he gets an offer as a corner. If he does what he did at UCLA last weekend as a corner at USC this weekend, well, I would not be surprised if he got an offer. A guy that we expected to maybe come into the skills camp, Asahan Arabar, from Upland, cornerback, about 5'10", 180 pounds. He's real iffy now. He's not going to show up this weekend, it sounds like. He was thinking about showing up to the Rising Stars camp, but now he's kind of leaning towards probably cutting his list. Looks like Cal and Arizona State. Arizona State probably being the leader there. Sounds actually like he and his teammate, Josh Nunez, who's one of the top-rated quarterbacks in the country, could be leaning towards Arizona State. Talking to him, there was a little bit of hinting going on there that he was really impressed with Arizona State. He and Josh were talking about going to the same school, and the only school that they really have in common is Arizona State. So we'll have to kind of watch for that. But it's going to be interesting. The skills camp is kind of going to be up in the air, and we'll kind of see who shows up. We'll see, you know, what underclassmen. One guy that should be there Saturday as an underclassman is wide receiver Robert Woods from Sarah High School, Gardena.
And another wide receiver.
Yes, another wide receiver. He was at he was at the UCLA camp last weekend, Saturday. Great. Probably the third best player there at the whole camp. So he's a guy that I expect to come into USC and probably – be very impressive this weekend. It will only get an offer. It's pretty early. UCLA has actually already offered him. That might come into play. USC may want to get into the race here. I don't think he's going to necessarily commit early, but he's definitely one of those top players in California for next year, and USC is going to have to evaluate him very carefully. So it's going to be interesting. He's going to be kind of a mix of guys that are going to come out of this camp, probably some underclassmen, probably some upperclassmen, you know, that are going to impress. And obviously the committed guys, probably the majority of those guys will end up being down there Saturday for the skills camp, and obviously Kevin Graff there for the line camp.
All right. Well, we'll be down there. USC football will be down there. USCfootball.com will be down there. Gerard will be down there. We'll have some video. We'll have photos. We'll have all kinds of coverage. Any kind of surprises, check on USCfootball.com over the weekend, and we'll have all of that for you. Gerard, nobody knows more about USC football recruiting than you. Thanks again for joining us, and thanks for your time.
Thank you. Next time, no law jokes.
No law. Okay, no law jokes. But we will thank the law offices of Bart Ring again, bartringlaw.com. Thanks for being a sponsor, helping keeping this dog and pony show going.
You the dog, I'm the pony.
All right. When we come back, we're going to talk with our new beat writer, Dan Wojcicki, about some of the updates from summer workouts. So stay tuned. Stay tuned.
Meet us on the other side of the break for more of the Peristyle Podcast.
Trojan fans, have legal problems or questions only an attorney can answer? Contact the law offices of Bart Ring. Bart is a proud Trojan alum who has been taking care of the legal needs of the USC family, its alumni and fans, for over 20 years. Like the Trojans under Pete Carroll, Bart and his team achieve successful results for their clients by preparation and outworking the opposition. Call Bart at 818-587-9299 or go to bartringlaw.com to see if he can help you with your legal issues. Don't forget to mention the Peristyle Podcast for a free consultation.
Hey, USC Trojan fans, to get into the huddle of your Southern Cal Trojans, log on to uscfootball.com today for all the latest in Trojan football, basketball, and recruiting news. Ryan Abraham will give you an in-depth analysis, recruiting updates, and will answer your questions every day on the message board. So for all the latest in team and recruiting news on your USC Trojans, check out uscfootball.com, the officially licensed Southern Cal site of the Rivals.com network.
We now return to the Peristyle Podcast and your host, Ryan Abraham.
All right, we're back with the final segment of this week's Peristyle Podcast. We're going to focus on USC summer workouts. The football team started conditioning workouts last week on Monday, so we're in the middle of the second week. Wednesday's actually their day off, so they all get to rest today and have some fun. And we're going to talk with new uscfootball.com beat writer Dan Wojcicki about the summer workouts. He's been down there along with myself for a few days for the workouts. How are you doing today, Dan?
I am also enjoying my day of rest today, much like the USC football team.
Yes.
So I'm doing good.
Excellent.
I'm doing good.
So you really didn't get a chance to see workouts like this down in Ole Miss, or the last team that you covered, just because they were a little more restrictive as far as access goes and stuff. What were your kind of overall impressions of Coach Carlisle's program and what you've kind of seen out in the field?
Well, there are a couple things that I really like about the program so far. I like how, you know, there's enough variation in it that nothing gets monotonous. You know, when they're doing medicine ball workouts, they're not doing the same lifts. You know, they might be still all focusing on hips, but they'll do it, you know, three different ways. Like, I like that a lot. I mean, it seems to keep players interested. Also, there's always that little built-in competition. I'm getting the idea that, you know, when it comes to, like, some of those things, like, you know, who can throw the medicine ball furthest, you know, who can back up the other guy, stuff like that. And, you know, lastly, I think the thing that I've noticed most is just how committed all the players are out there and how, you know, I mean, there's a lot of attention to detail. Players really, especially the guys who make the biggest impact on the field, you can tell are the guys in a lot of ways, you know, who are giving the most into workouts. You know, watching guys like Gallippo and Ray Maluga,
No problem. Pretty good.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. I got the M right. And then just watching guys like that, you know, Kevin Ellison, and I mean, and those are the guys that, to me, from what I've seen so far, you know, Feely, when we saw him out there, those are the guys that are really pushing themselves in drills, and it's, you know, obviously it pays off on the field. But, you know, I like that. I like how the one thing that we saw yesterday that was new was, you know, they scrapped doing 110-yard runs in favor of doing 20s. And the way they did is they made them like football specific, you know, where the cornerbacks might backpedal for 10 yards and then turn to their right and sprint. You know, the linebackers were doing something different. The linemen were doing something different. The running backs were running 12 yards and hitting the hole. And it was just something, you know, the receivers were making V cuts and stuff like that, really sharp cuts at 12 yards. And it was, I like how they made that football specific, and it seemed to, I think they seemed to get the results they were looking for.
Yeah. It's interesting when you watch down there, he does, you know, we go down fairly often. He's changing it up all the time. And I think some of it is, yeah, you want to get that variety, but you'd like these guys to stay motivated. And it's got to be hard, especially when they were doing the winter workouts right before spring football. Uh-huh. Try to stay motivated for a game that's months and months away. I don't see that as being all that easy. But every time I talk to a player, I talk to Stephon Johnson on Tuesday, and he kind of said the same thing. You know, they do find ways to stay motivated, though, even though you don't have a game coming up. I mean, you have so much competition there. At the running back spot, I think you mentioned this when we were driving down to campus. There's not a lot of schools where you have five-star running backs come in redshirt. And USC right now, six running backs, five of them are five-star, and Broderick Green is a four-star guy. Just crazy, the amount of talent. And I guess that's motivation enough. Even though if you don't have a game coming up in the next couple of weeks, you still have to stay, ahead of your competition. And the only way to do that is to keep getting better.
That's something that's come up in a lot of interviews so far, especially, I spoke to CJ Gable late last week, and that was one thing CJ said was that, and he was a guy who's missed time with injury. It's awful being on the sidelines and watching guys, essentially take your carries and watching guys, kind of move into the depth chart, move up the depth chart. These are guys that, obviously, they're not rooting against anybody or anything like that. I mean, it's nothing like that. But it's something where, though, I think, everybody keeps each other so hungry that way. And, I think when you look at the sustained success the team has had, that's got to be probably one of the biggest reasons, is just that internal competition burns that internal fire. And you see these players, out of workouts when, you could go through it at 85% and still probably take something out of it. And you could look like you're doing, the job the right way, but I don't get that impression at all from those guys. I feel like guys are really busting, and really guys are really, really working hard. I mean, you see the guys afterwards, they're covered in sweat and they're tired, sometimes too tired to even talk. And it's they're working. I mean, for sure, they're out there working hard.
Yeah, we had a funny moment. We went to the 10 o'clock workout on Tuesday. We tried to go to some different ones because usually the same players go to the same workouts. So we just want to see different people work out. They go at 7, 10, and 1. We haven't been to a 1 o'clock one yet, but we'll check one of those out as well. Some of the players were kind of getting in right around the time when the workouts are about to start. And they usually start off with they'll start with their hands down and run 40 yards and then stretch a little bit, run back. And Coach Carla will call out 1 minute or whatever right before, when there's 1 minute left until they start the workout. And so when some of the stragglers were coming, I think Everson Griffin was one of the guys. He was still on time, but Carlisle ran the guys as a joke just to make it look like he was late. And he was, this big guy, great athlete is running his butt off because he thinks he's a minute late, and they're all joking because he's really not. But it's kind of a funny moment down there when they're so worried about not just getting to these workouts, and doing their work, but just getting there on time and being there with everybody else when the thing gets started.
Well, that's something too that, I wrote about this a couple weeks ago on the heels of the Brendan Carroll video. That's one thing I like about this program, and it's just, it seems like, while they definitely work hard, they just tend to have fun. I'm reminded every time when I'm out on the practice field that this is the same place where Johnny Knoxville returned punts on Jackass. you know what I mean? It's something like, this is where he dressed up in a Tennessee uniform and just got leveled. For at the end of a night practice, it's something where, it's just that they don't take themselves way too seriously. I don't want that to sound like they're not working hard and they're not doing the right things, because clearly they are. But it's something where it's just amazing that they're able to have so much fun. And I guess maybe that's a byproduct of winning. I guess when you're winning bowl games and when you're rolling Illinois by 40 points, it's probably pretty easy to smile.
Yeah, well, we talked a little about the running backs. I wanted to kind of tease a piece you have coming up pretty soon on Broderick Green. For those who aren't familiar with Broderick Green, he's a kid out of Arkansas. His recruitment was really interesting because USC had got a couple transfers out of Arkansas, Mitch Mustaine and Damon Williams. They had been recruiting that state kind of hard, and we've actually got, the Arkansas publisher kind of was teasing me a little bit, asking Pete Carroll not to come pilfer his state anymore. So he's a funny kid, but he's kind of known on the team as the big back, and people kind of make fun of his weight a little bit. Just wanted to get your initial thoughts on him, maybe tease a little bit what that story you have coming up on him.
Yeah, well, we talked, and that was the first thing, you ask him you hate to do it, but you ask him, what do you weigh right now? Because, his weight has been such an issue. He's a guy who's over 240. He's just a big guy. He's 235 right now. He wants to drop down to about 228. He's a guy though who's he hears what people say about his weight. He knows it's an issue, And it's like when he gains it, it's not because he's, you know, out of shape or you know, doing the wrong things off the field or anything like that. He's just a big guy. I mean, really, that's the impression I got from him, is he's just a guy that, you know, I'm sure if he just sat around, he'd probably gain weight just from sitting around. You know, he looks at, he's not out, you know, all night, like just closing down a Carl's Jr. or anything like that. I mean, he's doing the right things. He just gains weight. And, you know, it's going to be, you know, if he can get to that 230, 232, 228, that kind of range right there. From talking to some of the people around the team, there's an impression that he's going to be difficult to keep off the field at times. And when you think about just the amount of depth and experience that they have at running back, the fact that this redshirt freshman might come in and get some carries because his skills are so unique. He's not like Joe McKnight. He's not like C.J. Gable or Stephon Johnson or Alan Bradford even. You know, he's just a house. And he's a guy, like I was talking to him, we were talking about some of the other big backs that he likes. You know, you would think that he would be into guys that just run over people. I mean, and he likes to do that. But, you know, he talked about Larry Johnson, too, in college, and how Larry Johnson kind of was shiftier than people thought. And, you know, we talked a little bit about T.J. Duckett, was a guy who I covered at Michigan State, who's a guy who was just absolutely enormous but fast and agile. And I think that's the kind of back Roderick wants to be, is he wants to be a guy who's big. And, you know, and he's hungry. He wants some attention, too, right now. I mean, he's a guy, he hears everybody talking about all these five-star running backs and stuff like that. I think, you know, one of the things that he told me that was funny is that he wants to get his name out there, too. So, you know, he's a guy who's motivated. I know the coaching staff's been very impressed with him so far in summer workouts. They're glad. I think they see that his weight's down. And, you know, we were watching him in some drills, and, I mean, he's moving very, very nicely. I mean, he doesn't look heavy on his feet. A lot of bigger guys, you know, do that. I mean, I don't know. I think he's an intriguing guy. Could be a little bit of an X factor. And, I mean, that's just another weapon in the backfield, is if you can have a guy like that, maybe in short yardage situations, as a guy who can come in and, you know, and get through and push that pile forwards.
Yeah, if anything, you got to give him sympathy. There's no other running back in the country as talented as he is that has to look up at five-star running backs ahead of him on the depth chart. So that's ridiculous.
And on top of that, Ryan, hear people call him fat.
Yeah. He definitely doesn't look fat. You see him down there. He looks really well put together. He's just bigger, and I think you're completely right. The fact that that's unique on the team, there's not one of those. And you have like a Alan Bradford's the next closest thing, but Bradford's not a run over type of guy. I mean, he's fast and he can be elusive, but he's not a bowl people over kind of guy, especially for his size. He's not, you know, he's around 220 or so. I think he's not someone that just runs people over. He seems to kind of go down on contact a little more easily. So, you know, Broderick Green is unique. And if you can be unique in this offense, I think that's going to help him. I mean, Joe McKnight brings something unique. He's going to see the field. If Broderick Green can become that big back, he's going to see the field. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, with so much talent, there's no question that having that kind of specialized skill, I mean, you know, that's going to keep Ronald Johnson on the field, you know, all fall, I'm sure, is the fact that he's the guy who can run faster than everybody else, and he can sprint, you know, and he's going to be the guy, you know, he's going to go down the field. And I mean, it's a unique skill, and it helps separate you from a group of guys that, you know, all do similar things pretty well. And that, you know, and that's the thing talking to Broderick. I mean, he wants to be on the field. I feel like, too, he's a guy who, you know, even if he stays at like 235, he's just going to get stronger. I mean, he could be 235 without an ounce of fat on him. I mean, really, like, he's built like that. And you know, Coach Carlisle and stuff, I think they see a guy like that, and I think they start to salivate a little bit. A guy who's just naturally big. You know, and a guy who appears to be willing to work hard, and you put those two things together to a strength and conditioning staff, I think they feel like he's a guy that's going to be difficult to keep off the field.
Certainly, I couldn't agree with you more. All right, well, that's all we got for this segment, all the time we have. Thanks very much for sharing your insights, Dan, on the USC summer workouts.
My pleasure. It's why you pay me the big bucks.
Oh, yeah. We'll be out there Friday. They're going to have a 6:30 full team conditioning workout. So
can't wait.
Dan will be down there 6:30 a.m. It's tough stuff. So just don't show up with like a breakfast burrito and a milkshake or something. And just, you know, while they're
breakfast burrito and a milkshake, huh?
Yeah, just so you know. I've seen
your dietary habits are coming into question already.
You don't want to be walking around the sideline while they're out working and eating a lot of food. But enjoy that on Friday, Dan, and we will talk to you next week.
Sounds good, Ryan. Take it easy.
All right. Thanks very much for listening to the episode 17 of the Peristyle Podcast. We'll be back next week with more on the USC Trojans. So thank you for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can now download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player. Just search for Peristyle Podcast the next time you log into iTunes.